The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on June 6, 1999. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. This morning we'll be finishing the Fukan Zazengi, which, as I think most of you know, I've been doing in the sessions for the past, I guess we started last fall. And I think we can finish it today. I'll be doing the last three paragraphs, which I'll read right now. Of course, Dogen didn't write in paragraphs, but that's what we have here in English. So, but this is Dogen Zenji's Fukan Zazengi, your universal recommendation for Zazen. So the last three paragraphs read as follows. In general, this world and other worlds as well, both in India and China, equally hold the Buddha seal. And overall prevails the character of this school, which is simply total engagement in immobile sitting. Although it is said that there are as many minds as there are people, still all negotiate the way solely in Zazen. Why leave behind the seat that exists in your own home and go aimlessly off to the dusty realms of other lands? If you make one misstep, you go astray from the way which is even now directly before you. You have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Do not use your time in vain. You are maintaining the essential working of the way. Who would take the wasteful delight in the spark from a flintstone? Besides, form and substance are like the dew on the grass, destiny like the dart of lightning, emptied in an instant, vanished in a flash. Please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not be suspicious of the true dragon. Devote your energies to a way that directly indicates absolute. Revere the person of complete attainment who is beyond all human agency. Gain accord with the enlightenment of the Buddhas, succeed to the legitimate lineage of the patriarch Samadhi. Constantly perform in such a manner, and you will be assured of becoming a person such as they. Your treasure store will open of itself, and you will use it at will. So that's the close of the Fukan Zazengi. What Dogen says, in general, this world and other worlds as well, both in India and China, equally hold the Buddha seal, the truth seal. So in general, this world he's referring to, this is the world of illusion, this world of this and that. It's the world that we commonly live in, the world of form, the world of this is the world that you inhabit. It is the world, I mean, if you show up, if you're there, this is the world we're speaking of. It's the world in which you appear, and it is called illusion. He says both this world and other worlds as well. And these other worlds then that he is speaking of beyond the world of illusion that we normally occupy. Well, I guess I should say too that this world of illusion, why is it illusory? What's the illusion here? And it is just simply that we see substance. When we see, well, just as we are sitting here in this room and we see the floor, we see the walls, and we see each other, and we see the cushions, we hear the birds chirping and the wind in the trees. But this is the world of illusion. If we see this as substantial, if we see some kind of solidity here, if we see an ongoing floor, an ongoing Zendo, the ongoing bird and the sound in the trees. This is illusion because there isn't any kind of solidity there. There isn't actually any kind of substance to this world. It only appears that way. But to the extent that we don't see it as illusion, it appears very solid and very real. This is the world of illusion. So in general, this world of illusion and other worlds as well. And these other worlds then are, well, not the world of illusion. Basically, this is the world of inhabited by enlightened beings, those who actually see. It's the same world as this world of illusion, in a sense. But as always, and in Zen teachings and in this practice, you should always bear in mind we never stray very far from the acknowledgement that what we are speaking of here is the mind and how we understand things, how we see things. It is just simply a matter of seeing. Either we see it or we do not. And if we do not see that this world is illusory, then we are caught up in the illusory world. If we do see that the form and appearance of this world is of an illusory nature, it doesn't mean that it is not real. It is real enough, but it is real as illusion. Okay, it is real as a dream is real. You have some experience in a dream, you cannot say that you haven't had that experience. You have had that experience, but the experience is that of a dream. So we don't dismiss it. It isn't as if nothing has occurred here. This dream has occurred. Same thing with this world of illusion. Even though we call it illusory, it doesn't mean that we dismiss it as though it were nothing at all. But it is illusion. And if we do not see that it is illusion, then we are caught up in it. This is where we find dukkha. This is the pain and the suffering. But in other worlds as well, as Dogen is saying, this is then just simply this world as it is seen by those who are awake. And it is simply to see the illusory nature, the lack of substance and solidity within the objects of this world. So these are the two worlds then that, well, he says other worlds, but basically, of course it could be of all kinds, but they have basically these two general natures. And it really comes down to whether we see or whether we do not see. And then the whole world follows from this seeing or this lack of seeing. So in general, this world and other worlds as well, both in India and China, equally hold the Buddha seal, equally hold the truth seal, that wherever we go, whatever we have here, whether it is the world of illusion or the world in which we transcend this illusion, we see through this illusion, in all cases we have the truth here, the Buddha seal, because we never really leave reality. It is impossible that we can do this. And he goes on to say that, and overall pervades the character of this school. This is the school that Dogen is in, the teaching that he brought from China into Japan. Though he didn't promote it as the Soto school, speaking of one school as opposed to another, but that basically, well, I'll say more about this in a minute. But that basically what he has here, that this is the complete teaching, this is the full teaching. That is the school that he is speaking of here. And so it isn't like one sect of Buddhism or Zen as opposed to another. But this true school, this true transmission of the Dharma, this is what he is speaking of here. And overall prevails the character of this school, which is simply total engagement in immobile sitting. Total engagement in this practice of Zazen. That is the character of this school. And what he is speaking of here is that the character of this school, the character of this full transmission of the Dharma, is characterized by this practice. But when he says immobile sitting, of course he is speaking of the Zazen. But what he is truly speaking of is not moving off from this realization of reality itself. This is the total engagement in immobile sitting. It goes on to say that although it is said that there are as many minds as there are people, and of course I think we can all understand this, it certainly seems to be true, but he said still all negotiate the way solely in Zazen. So even though we have, each one of us, we're all different, we all have a different background, we all have a different history, experiences, education, parents, culture, you know, whatever, language. Well, those of us in here pretty much share a lot of these things to some degree. But nevertheless, we are all different. We all have a different mind, a different experience, a different orientation, a different understanding, different talents and motives and feelings and just ways of putting it all together. This is very clear. And there's no denying of this, and yet in spite of that, in spite of this difference that seems to separate us all, that we all arrive at the truth, we all come to the truth, we all negotiate the way solely through Zazen, solely in Zazen. And once again, what he means, if you recall, as we looked earlier in the Fukan Zazengi, where he says that, you know, the Zazen I speak of has nothing to do with sitting or lying down, that he isn't just strictly speaking of, people get very confused about this point and think that he is only talking about getting into this cross-legged posture and sitting in Zazen. Once again, what he is speaking of is the mind, and where is our mind, and is it here, is it present, is it really engaged in what is actually going on, and do we actually see the lack of substance of all the different mind objects within our experience. This is to negotiate the way through Zazen or in Zazen. We come to this realization, we do it with this focus, this composed mind, which comes to see just exactly what is going on here, the awakening to this moment. And so what he is speaking of here is not the posture of sitting in Zazen, but this actual mind, this actual awakening to what is going on here, or the attention or devotion to attending to this moment and what is going on. This is what he is speaking of when he speaks of negotiating the way in Zazen. So why leave behind the seat that exists in your home and go aimlessly off to dusty realms of other lands? Yeah, why leave the seat that exists right here in your home? What is he speaking of? Well, it's just simply that the truth is right here. You do not need to go off somewhere. Of course, maybe you can. It doesn't matter that if you do or you do not. Once again, we are speaking of the mind. If you go off to some other realm, to some other place, you go to Tibet or Japan or South America, wherever it is you think you need to go, you can do this. But if you are doing this with a mind that is longing and reaching and searching, this is just to kind of go aimlessly off into other lands. Of course, all the while, you never leave the truth, you never leave reality, you are always just right here with the truth and reality. So, of course, the opportunity is always there. It never departs from you, it never leaves you. But to the extent that we get caught up in a mind that is longing and searching and looking, feeling like it needs to go someplace else, that it cannot awaken right here, as long as we have this mind, we simply do not awaken. That very mind is already immediately not the awakened mind. It is not to be here. It is just simply that. So why leave the seat that exists within your own home? Why look out there? Why go to this other place? If you need to go, well then, of course, go. But just realize that in terms of this task at hand of coming to the truth, waking up to the truth, realizing the truth, this is already at hand. It is already just right here. Dogen has given instruction as to how we can go about this practice. It doesn't involve, you'll notice in his instruction, it doesn't involve having to go somewhere else. This going aimlessly off to other realms, this doesn't necessarily mean going into other lands, going into distant places, but we just go aimlessly off in some way, where rather than engage in this practice, here's the practice, it is just right here. And for example, here as we set it up here at this place, at Dharma Field, here's the practice, it is just right here. But we often will try to make arrangements for things. We want to change things. We don't want to just simply engage in this practice as it is simply presented, as it is simply done here. We don't want to negotiate the way through Zazen. Well, maybe we do want to negotiate, but we don't fully realize just what that is. And we think somehow that we can somehow negotiate the Zazen, that we can negotiate this practice, that we can set up our terms and do it in our particular way. In other words, this practice is about transformation. It is about forgetting yourself, the dropping off of yourself, But we don't allow that to happen when we keep beefing up the self and we keep trying to set up even this practice so that it kind of adjusts itself to our life and our whims and our fancies and our desires and our this or our that. Instead, what it is that we should learn to do is just to engage in this practice, and we should learn to adapt ourselves to this practice. He's about to speak of this here, that we shouldn't waste this time that we have. It's very precious. And it isn't a matter of making it go your way. This is about the very practice of letting the self drop away. And so we should be very careful of this as we find ourselves trying to adjust the practice to suit us. Not so good. I remember Katagiri Roshi, I've told this story before. We had this large bell, larger than the one that we use here. Bell's so big. And it was discovered by one of the Doans that if you just kind of tilt the bell, you can get a very nice sound with this. And so people were starting to tilt the bell, and I was guilty of it too. Yeah, it was pretty good. But Katagiri Roshi, he straightened us out on this point. No, the bell, this is how the bell sits. The bell should sit level with the cushion that it is resting on. We don't tilt the bell. In other words, we don't force the world to adjust itself to us. We do not force this practice to adjust itself to us. No, we adjust ourselves to the natural placement of this bell. The bell rests in the most stable fashion if it's sitting level. And so we set it level, and now we adjust ourselves. So we just have to kind of put the stick a little lower and hit it with a little sharper angle. So we just make this little adjustment, and now we can get that same quality of sound. In fact, I think we can find that if you strike the bell in the proper way, you will ultimately find the best sound of all. But this is freedom. We don't understand this point. We think that freedom will be if I can get everything to go the way I want it to be. That's how I'll find freedom. Well, we don't find freedom. We find frustration in that. We find anger because things don't go our way very often, only briefly. And if it happens to be other people and things like that, sooner or later they're going to start to resent it, and then you're going to end up with a lot of resistance. It's just an endless chain of difficulty and pain and sorrow, and we wrap it around ourselves and tie ourselves up in so many different ways. Well, this is just kind of aimlessly going off. It's very specific, very definite about what it is that we should be doing, and we don't have to go off here and we don't have to go off there. We don't have to make everything comply with us, but just simply learn to settle down with what is given, what is sitting right here, right before us right now, to settle ourselves right there in the world without expecting the world to adjust itself to you. And now you can begin to practice, or at least you have greatly increased your chance of actually settling down in this very practice that Dogen is speaking of as Zazen, which isn't just a simple sitting in the cross-legged position, which we are so easily taken in by. He says, if you make one misstep, so this is critical, you make one misstep and you go astray. So all these little points that I'm speaking of, what again am I speaking of? The bell is one thing, but what we're really talking about is not the bell and your relationship with the bell, and that you shouldn't move that bell around and change it to adapt to you. We are talking about your mind. And we are talking about the shift that occurs in your mind that you will allow yourself to change, so you don't expect that bell to have to adjust itself to you, but that your mind is shifted in such a way that you will adapt yourself to the situation that you are in and learn to practice right there. So this one misstep is something that is occurring not even in this gross level of tilting the bell. We are talking about something that is occurring within your very own mind, so that even if you leave that bell level, you can still be making this misstep, because maybe there's still some kind of wanting about this bell. Maybe there's a little scheming. Well, maybe I can adjust something up, do something else here. There's always this dissatisfaction. There's always this really stepping off this path, this sole way that we can negotiate the way in Zazen. So this is what Dogen is reminding of, and it is very, very subtle. But this is something that we have to come to recognize and to know. We have to be excruciatingly honest with ourselves and to realize just how big our egos are and how forceful and the subtle ways with which we allow this to take over and to rule our lives. If you make one misstep, you go away from the way which is even now directly before you. So, once again, this misstep, it is our attitude, it is our approach, it is the way with which we are engaging in this practice, taking up this practice. You cannot take up this practice in the proper way, this way of negotiating the way in Zazen, if you take it up with some idea, with some notion about what you're going to get from it, with what you're going to put into it, or how you're going to adjust it so that it will fit your schedule and this sort of thing. This is not the way to negotiate the way, because you will be left with a greedy, grasping mind, and that mind is not the mind of enlightenment. You will not wake up, because you will be making ever so slightly this misstep and you will not discover this mind if you continue to make that misstep. This is a critical point. It is extremely subtle, and it involves your own absolute inscrutable honesty with yourself and an examination of the devotion and the heart that you have, that you bring to this practice of Zazen. This is an absolutely critical point that Dogen is making here. And he goes on to say, you have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Yeah, well, here you are as a human being. We don't know about other times, other places, but here you are now. This is a rare moment. It is right here, right now. This is the moment in which you can awaken. Okay? And you should take advantage of that. It is a rare moment. We are not in Kosovo. We are not in some other situation. We are in a zendo here right now. This is a rare opportunity for you. You have gained a human form, you have a human mind, you have the ability to do this, you have the opportunity to do this, you have a place to do this. Everything is going quite well for you right now in this moment to engage fully in this practice, to not make the misstep, and to devote yourself to this practice. If we are truly, seriously concerned with awakening now and in this moment, this is a precious time for us. And it is always just right here, right now. And we shouldn't let this pass. He says, do not use your time in vain. It is so easy for us to think, that tomorrow is going to be pretty much like today, and the next day pretty much like today as well. But we don't know. We don't know what is about to happen. He said, do not waste your time in vain. You are maintaining the essential working of the way. That is our point here. That is, if that is our heart, if that is our desire, if that is what we are interested in doing, we cannot waste this precious time. Who would take wasteful delight in the spark from a flintstone? And remember, this is at a time, Dogen is writing this to people who didn't have matches. They didn't have lighters and things like this. I mean, he's speaking of, people would understand this, that, you know, to the implements with which they had to light a fire, they haven't been perfected yet, you know. And so if you get this spark from your flintstone, you're not going to go lightly with this. You are going to take this very seriously. You have this fleeting moment right now, and you don't know how long this is going to last. So don't waste your time in vain. You are maintaining the essential working of the way here. And, you know, in other words, you are doing something very important here. In fact, what you are doing here is life and death. And we shouldn't let this pass away. Chuck gave a very good presentation of this yesterday when he talked about how our practice is really a matter of life and death. Yes, this is true. This is that image, too, that we discussed yesterday of the hair on fire. But it's very easy for us, once again, to step into this with our own mind, our own thinking, our own calculating, you know, and where we get too caught up with this image of the hair on fire as we take it too literally. But the fact of the matter is, if your hair is on fire, the point of this image is, it is speaking of the urgency of this problem that we have. And it really is a matter of life and death. This is the matter of awareness. Awareness is a matter of life and death, because to the extent that we are aware, this is life. To the extent that we are not aware, this is death. We think that death is just, I don't know, somehow when the body becomes inert and rots away. Of course, that's death. But this death, really, in terms of the mind, in terms of being awake and being aware, this death is just simply that, the lack of this awareness. So this is a very critical issue. We are maintaining the essential working of the way here. Who would take wasteful delight in a spark from a flintstone? All of this is very important for us to bear in mind. Also, this matter of it's very easy for us to lose the sight of the essential point of a teaching such as this, because we really have to bring it into ourselves and bring it in, you know, to this moment, into our own mind. And there isn't going to be any calculating in that moment. The whole point of this teaching is to point out the urgency of this problem that we have, and that you have to fully engage. You cannot put it off. You have to deal with it now. And this is where you're going to find awakening. And there's no choice in the matter. Maybe another image is one that I remember from my childhood, rather than the hair on fire image. I remember one time it was in central Minnesota. There's this beautiful lake. Well, at least I used to love going up there. I don't know what it's like now, many years ago now, but Lake Charlotte. And my aunt and uncle and my cousin, they lived there in that town. I used to love to go visit because this was the best swimming hole of any place I had ever seen. It was great. It had a nice beach, and then there was a dock that went out, looped around, and across, the dock went out and took a 90 degrees and came across, and then came back to the shore again. So it enclosed kind of a shallow pool for the little kids to go swimming, and then out beyond this dock, you'd have to swim out to it, but just beyond the end of that dock, we just suddenly started dropping off rather quickly, pretty deep water. Then they had a great diving dock out there, and my brother and my cousin and I, we used to swim there all the time and go out on that diving. It was just a great place to swim. I think today they don't have such things because it's probably a little dangerous. But I remember, I think we were just getting to the lake that day, and there was a lot of people there on the beach, and kids were in the water and stuff. And I remember I saw this kid, an older kid, running out on the dock and then just jumping in the water and going. This little kid was running along behind, following the bigger kid. And I was a little surprised that a little kid like that, you know, I thought, well, that kid can swim, because as soon as you go off that dock, it's deep on the far side of it. The very moment that little kid, went into the water, suddenly a man screamed the name, I guess, of the kid. I don't know what he screamed. And everyone looked, and here's this man. He's running through the crowd on the beach, and he was down that dock like that, and he was in the water. I mean, this man wasn't thinking about, I mean, I still remember, I was probably 9, 10 years old. I remember this very clearly, because I had never seen a person respond like that. This man had nothing on his mind but to get that kid out of the water. And I suppose it was the father watching his little child, you know, realizing this child's that's too deep out there. And he thought of nothing else. He wasn't concerned with making himself look like a fool or kicking sand on anybody as he ran. He just, he had one thing on his mind and one thing only, and he was going to do it no matter what, or die in the process. And he got the kid out of the water. But the point of all of this, and the point of the hair on fire image, and we shouldn't lose sight of, is that there's an urgency to this problem that we have. It is very difficult for us, living in this pretty comfortable culture that we have here, to realize the life and death nature that we are sitting with. We think I'm not facing life and death. Oh, yes, you are. You are facing it in this very moment, and you don't even know if you're going to survive this day, or as you walk out of this building, or you don't know what is going to happen. You do not know how much time you have. And Dogen is speaking of this here. But at the same time, whether you've got 10 minutes or 10 years or 100 years, you have this urgent problem, and it has to be dealt with now. You cannot put it off to some other time. You will never deal with it in the future. You can only deal with it now. There isn't any future. You have to deal with it now. At some point, and before we awaken to what is really going on here, we have to be shocked with this reality, this knowledge, this understanding that we have a life and death critical issue right here that we have to deal with right now. the moment you walk into the store and the person begins shooting it up, you might notice how critical this is. Or you're in the plane and the wing suddenly falls off. I mean, I don't know what it takes to shock us into this, but it is possible for us to realize, even as we sit here within a relatively comfortable life, that you are actually faced with this problem now. And the problem has to do, once again, with our mind, with our attitude, with our understanding, with our approach, with our sense of urgency for this. Okay, one more thing I should say about these images of the hair on fire or the father running down the dock to save his kid. These were all kind of frantic actions. You know, the hair, you can imagine your hair's on fire and you're not going to move slowly, you're going to move quickly. Same thing with the father. He moved fast. And so we might think then that this kind of urgency is speaking of that somehow that we have to act quickly, that we have to act fast, we have to act in kind of a frenzied manner. And that is not the case at all. In fact, I would say slow down. Just the opposite of that, just slow down and start learning to attend. What we are speaking of here is simply that attitude of mind, that cast of mind, that whatever it is that drives the father to run down the beach and onto the dock in the way that he did. It's that attitude of mind. That is what we have to have, this sense of urgency, and that we cannot put it off any longer, and that we are going to engage in this, and that when we come here to practice, we practice with this attitude of mind, and knowing that this is really a life and death issue. We give it our full, wholehearted effort. This is a critical point, because short of this, we simply do not awaken. We will remain in our slumber. We will, just kind of feel like the practice can be kind of a tack on. It's something you do in addition to some of the other things that you do, maybe the more critical things like earning a living or something like this. That will seem more life and death to you, perhaps, than this practice. No, this practice, we're speaking of enlightenment here or awakening. If we're truly to come to this, we have to realize the absolute urgency of this. It is right up there with oxygen. You're not going to live too long without it. So, do not waste your time in vain. You are maintaining the essential working of the way. Who would take wasteful delight in the spark from a flintstone? And he said, besides, form and substance are like the dew on the grass, destiny like the dart of lightning, emptied in an instant, vanished in a flash. So form and substance, yeah, this stuff that keeps us in our slumber, the slumber is, remember now, it's the slumber of thinking, believing in the solidity of all of this, the persistent reality of all these different objects and thoughts and feelings that arise from moment to moment and vanish. We don't see them that way. We see them as persisting. So we don't realize that these things are like the dew on the grass. Form and substance is like the dew on the grass. Not long lived. It is a sure thing that it will not remain. And destiny is like a dart of lightning. Like I said, you could step out of this building and that's it. It is over now. Lightning literally strikes and you have lost your opportunity. You have this physical form now. You have everything arranged for you right now to engage in this practice wholeheartedly. You don't know how long this will last. And the things that you tend to think are long-lasting, the form and the substance of the different items within your life, these things too are fleeting and will not remain. They're all emptied in an instant, and actually what we don't really realize is that they are emptied in each instant, and they vanish like a flash in each moment. So Dogen finally then, he says in the last paragraph here, please, honored followers of Zen. So here now he's even pleading with us. This is an urgent matter. Please. He wants these monks to wake up. He wants you to wake up. I want you to wake up. You want to wake up. So please, he's pointing directly to, this is what we need to do. We are speaking of an attitude, a state of mind, a way that we engage our lives from moment to moment. Please, honored followers of Zen, if you are a follower of this way, this Zen practice, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, you all know this story. It originates in the I believe the Digha Nikaya, which we have in our library, if you want to read the story. But you know the story of the elephant and the, what is it, a king, I forget exactly how the story goes, but brings his elephant in, and six or seven different blind men are, you know, groping for this elephant, and one feels a wall, he feels the body of the elephant, another one feels the leg and thinks it's a tree, and one feels a tail and thinks it's a rope, and one feels the trunk and thinks it's a snake and this kind of thing. And but these different people are groping. So here it is that we all have this different mind as we approach Zazen, and we all approach with our different experiences and things. And we're all experiencing, as we get caught up in the substantial world, not realizing that it empties in a flash, and we see substantiality here, and we hold on to this form, or we grasp that idea, or this thing, or even this practice, but not the practice itself that we just engage in with total devotion to the practice, but with some idea about the practice. So we grasp the idea of Zazen. This is all groping for the elephant. We're all looking for something. We're all interpreting the universal experience that is going on here, but we interpret it in various ways, like the blind man groping for the elephant. So we're long accustomed to this, where this is what we do, this is what we're used to, and now comes along, Dogen points out this practice and how it is done, the urgency of it, and the kind of mind and attitude that we need to engage this way, this practice. And he calls this the true dragon. He says, but you're long groping, you're used to, you know, taking this, so you take this practice up in the same way that we take up anything else that we do. We're truly interested, that's where we take it up. We really want to do this, but we grasp it in the same way, and we don't realize that this, unlike anything else you're going to do, is pointing right back to your own mind and your attitude and your approach to life and how you're engaged in this moment, no matter what it is that you do. And you don't have to drop a whole lot of what you do. You don't have to go off to distant lands. You don't have to quit your job and all these kinds of things. No matter what you do, you can find this mind and this sense of urgency. It's not a frenzied activity. It is just the particular mind that we have where we learn to fully engage in what we are doing from moment to moment. This is the practice of Zazen that Dogen is speaking of here. But we come to this practice, we're accustomed to picking up things in a certain way. It's a self-other thing. What can I get out of this? What can I do? How can I use this? All of this. This is just groping, groping for the elephant. So he said, please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not be suspicious of the true dragon. This refers to a story of a fellow who loved dragons. Katagiri Roshi used to tell this story, and he'd use it for different occasions, but there's a story of a fellow who loved dragons, and so in his house he had all these different pictures of dragons and images of dragons and statues and things. He had dragons all over his house. Walls were lined with images of dragons. Well, finally one day this dragon hears about this man who loves dragons, you know, so the dragon said, well, hey, I'm going to go pay a visit. You know, this guy loves dragons so much, so this guy's sitting in his house one day and a dragon sticks his head in the window. And the man absolutely, he freaked out. You know, he just went crazy, screamed, ran out of the house. So we can have all these different images and ideas about this practice and about this way and about how to negotiate the way and the spiritual life and what that is. And there's all kinds of notions and ideas and routes that we can take and do this and do that and incantations and whatnot. It goes on and on and on. There's no end to this. Or any other aspect of our life, for that matter. And where we think we're going to get some kind of satisfaction out of this, some kind of quieting of the heart and mind, and we engage in this. That's the groping for the elephant, and we treat the practice in this very way. We have these images of the dragons and things like that. These images that we have of the true way. Dogen is pointing to what really needs to be done here. It is done within your own mind, within your own attitude, in the sense of urgency, all this. This is the true dragon that he is pointing to. This is the real meaning of this practice of Zazen, and this real meaning of how it is to negotiate the way. and the urgency. So he says, do not be suspicious. You've been groping in the dark a long time. I am pointing out to you, this is the true way. This is the way you're going to do it. There's no other way to do this. He's not saying you've got to believe what I'm saying here exactly. What he's talking about, the way to do this is not his teaching. It is not the teaching of the Buddha. The way to do this is to engage your mind in the practice of living out this moment from moment to moment with this sense of urgency, not in a frenzied manner, but in the sense that you are going to do it and you're not going to kid around with it. You're not going to play with it. You're going to actually do it. And this is the true dragon. This is, and it might sound like too much. This practice is too much. It is too hard. It sounds too constricting. But actually, it is not. We will find freedom within this practice. I think we'll be speaking of that here in a minute. But he said, devote your energies to a way that directly indicates absolute. So what we are speaking here, this is a direct pointing at. Of course, he can't actually say what the absolute truth reality is. As soon as we put it in words, that is not it. So this way, what he is indicating here and what this practice is all about, it directs us. It'll steer our attention to noticing this universal experience, this actual reality of this moment. This way points directly to the absolute. And then he says, revere the person of complete attainment who is beyond all human agency. Here he is speaking, then, this person of complete, this is the person, the actual practitioner, the one who can actually do this. And this is you, ultimately. You can do this. You shouldn't think of this person as being something other than you or something apart from you or, once again, something. This is groping for the elephant, once again. Or that your enlightenment or your awakening is something over there around the corner, something you have to strive and struggle for, something of this sort, act in some frenzied way. No, that this person, you revere this person. What person are we talking about? No person in particular here, but we are talking about the person who actually engages in this activity, who actually engages in this practice. Revere that person, he says, of complete attainment, who is beyond all human agencies, beyond any kind of giving and taking and selling and buying and calculating and arranging, accounting for in any way. It's beyond all of this. There's nothing we can say about this. There's nothing we can point to directly here. The person who isn't touched and tossed around by the ups and downs and the vicissitudes of life. Revere this person of complete attainment. Okay, gain accord, and he's speaking of you here, just listen. He says, gain accord with the enlightenment of the Buddhas. Gain accord with the enlightenment of the Buddhas. Succeed to the legitimate lineage of the patriarch Samadhi. And this is just what he's speaking of, and this is what he is pointing to, and this is how we do it. And do not think that you cannot gain accord with the enlightenment of the Buddhas or succeed to the legitimate lineage of the patriarch Samadhi. And as Samadhi, this is once again, single-minded concentration. It is that very kind of concentration displayed by the Father. Single-mindedly went after this task that was at hand, this urgent task of the moment. There was nothing else to do but to save that child. But to realize that this is the situation that we are actually in, and we are always in this situation. We do not come out of this situation, that we always have to act in this way. Not the frenzied part of it, but the total devotion of mind, the setting of the mind on the task at hand, and then just continuing to do. This is the patriarch Samadhi that he is speaking of here. Constantly perform in such a manner, and you are assured. So you learn to engage the practice in this way, and then he says, you are assured. So here Dogen gives assurance. And I've offered this too, you don't believe me. Of course I say 2 years, ridiculous, I know. 2 years, I don't know, 10 years. But if you learn to engage in what we are talking about, once again, this attitude of mind, this devotion, this realizing of the urgency of this problem, and that you can't put it off and you can't sublimate it. It doesn't come behind something else. This is right out front here. The Father didn't think, well, I have these appointments or other things to do, or I don't know, I don't feel like running at the moment. Everything else drops to the side, and now it's to do this. And this is what we are speaking of here. But constantly perform in such a manner, and you are assured. You are assured. If you can learn to find this kind of energy and engagement, and it is liberating, do not think for a moment that this is some kind of bondage, or this is too hard, or gee, I don't want to put other things off, or whatever. That you don't have to necessarily put anything off, but we are talking about an attitude of mind here, and that we are not kidding ourselves, we are not joking around about this, we are not deceiving ourselves, that this actually comes first. And if you can find your way to arrange it like this, and I guarantee you, I agree with Dogen, you will be assured of becoming a person such as they, the Buddhas and the patriarchs. Now he says that your treasure store will open of itself and you will use it at will. This well, this unending well, this deep well of the Dharma, there's no end to this. The wellspring here, this coming up of this great treasure, it isn't something that comes about by having stored it up. It doesn't have some limit on it. It doesn't have some terms to it or anything like this. It is right there. It is a wellspring of wisdom, and it is yours. You have your hands on the lid right now. It's just to engage in this practice in this way is just simply to open it, for that matter, you will discover to engage in this way, it opens of its own accord. And that is what he's saying here, that your treasure store will open of itself. You engage in this way, and you will tap into this deep, penetrating wisdom. It is something that you have always possessed. You have it now. You do not realize the treasure that you have access to even now in this very moment. Of course, if we think of it in terms of me here, and I've got that thing over there. Now, of course, we don't have it. We don't realize just what this is, but you engage in this practice in such a way that you haven't separated yourself off from this moment. And at some point, when we actually awaken to the truth, reality, the Dharma itself, it just begins to come out of us. It isn't a matter that we put stuff in and now we can regurgitate or anything of this, or it isn't something that we've learned. It isn't something we put together, something we're calculating. It is just a realization of the truth itself as it comes up in each moment, and this comes springing forth out of you just like water from an artesian well. The treasure store will open of itself and you will use it at will. And this is the liberation. This is the complete freedom. We think, like, well, yesterday we were talking at the dinner table, lunch table yesterday. I mentioned there's a trick to everything, and there's a trick to, maybe trick's the wrong word, but there's a way of doing everything, and I even mentioned that there's even a trick to getting up in the morning. And the trick to getting up in the morning is just to get up, right? Yeah. That's the trick. It's very simple. It's very simple. But we think, say we want to engage in this practice of Zazen. Some of you don't live close enough so you can't avail yourselves of the place here. So you have a practice at home. But it's very critical that you do it, and that you do it with some kind of regular basis. And if you engage here, of course we have a definite, here it is, there's a schedule. This is it, this is the time to do it, and this is how we have it, you know. And think, oh boy, I don't know, that's kind of, you know, well, you throw yourself in prison with with that kind of, so hard to get up in the morning at that time, you know. Now, well, the trick of getting up in the morning is just, you just get up in the morning. You just get up, see? Because if this is what you're going to do, you just get up. Well, maybe something else later on in the day has to be adjusted then. So, okay, so you don't stay up till 12 at night or whatever it is. I mean, something else changes. Or you take a nap in the afternoon. I mean, and, you know, I can't do it. Well, it's something, you know, but it's just a matter of just doing that. But my point here is not so much the trick of waking up. My point is that we see bondage where there is freedom. And we throw ourselves into prison because we do not realize, I shouldn't say the trick. It is not a trick. It is an understanding, a realization of how to engage your life from moment to moment. And when we don't know that, and we fall back into our thinking, well, I don't know, I don't feel like, you know, man. Well, there we go. And we are in bondage. We realize that that very mind is hardly an enlightened mind. It is a mind that's just wallowing in self-pity and in delusion, you know, pain, suffering, you know. And so one way or another, in all kinds of instances, we find that mind. This practice is about abolishing that, just getting rid of it altogether. And the very thing that will free us from this, because the bondage that we are in is in that kind of mind, it is in that kind of thinking, and this practice is the antithesis of that. And so we shouldn't engage this practice in such a way that we fall prey to that. Well, is there any urgent question about this piece that we've been looking at? Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.